Now, have you considered buying those shoes that have the roller skates built into the heels? Because
that
I think
was
those
going
could
to be my question. Like a double.
I would have to get them for our whole family, though. Otherwise, I would be rolling ahead, and they'd all be just watching me skate around.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to E-commerce Unscripted. This is the podcast where we help you become a WooCommerce master. My name is Sam. I'm a marketer here at GoDaddy, and I am joined today by two wonderful panelists. First of all, coming to us from maybe sunny Montreal, Quebec, Canada, Tabitha Turton. Tabitha, will you tell us a little about yourself and, most importantly, the weather on this random day that's totally not when people are listening to this podcast?
Hi, everyone. Yes, I'm Tabitha, and I'm a product manager here at GoDaddy, and I'm focused primarily on e-commerce. So this is I'm very excited and happy to be part of this panel today. As for the weather, which is really the most important question that we will be fielding throughout this episode, it is sunny and above zero. So we're doing well here in the great north.
That's fantastic. And several thousand miles away, coming to you from Orlando, Florida, Marcus Burnett.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I am on the care team for GoDaddy here, mostly on the managed WooCommerce side. And yeah, I'm here in sunny central Florida. It's getting warmer. And that means the wildlife comes out and I get to see the alligators.
All right. Well, we've got the alligators, the polar bears, and I have no native wildlife in Southern California. I don't know. Chihuahuas, like my two chihuahuas. Today, our topic is returns. So returns are an important aspect for all retailers, especially e-commerce retailers. The return rate across e-commerce stores is benchmarked anywhere between 15 to 40%. For in-store purchases, it's below 10%. That means e-commerce stores can be seeing up to four times more returns than brick-and-mortar stores. And of course, returns have a negative effect on so many e-commerce companies' day-to-day business. 57% of e-commerce companies say returns do have a negative effect on them. They can be time-consuming, they are a large cost, and they can be quite problematic. Returns can eat into margins significantly. The cost of processing a return can be up to 65% of the total selling price. That's why we need to talk about some strategies to curb returns, or at least how to make sure that returns don't affect your business too negatively. So today we'll talk about the psychology behind why people return things, steps you can take to reduce the number of returns at your store, and we'll talk about an effective return strategy that you can employ in order to help with customer retention. But first, we're going to start with just chatting a little bit about returns and share some stats with you. When's the last time you returned something you bought online? You don't have to tell us what it is. Just when's the last time you returned something you bought online?
I boxed a couple things up yesterday and they're going out today.
Wow. Very recent return. Marcus, what about you? When's the last time you returned something you bought online?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to break that record, but I usually try and do as much homework as I can. Obviously, there's only so much that you can do online, which is why the rate is so much higher online than in store. But I would say I probably return something every couple of months or so. So maybe within the last month.
Okay, I think I'm about there with you. I've definitely returned something within the past month or so, but I cannot touch Tabitha, who's literally going to finish this podcast and then go to the post office to drop off her returns. So, stat for you, 48% of online shoppers have returned an online order in the past 12 months. That tracks with the stats earlier that people are buying things online and returning them. All right, now we're going to get into what you returned. So why did you make your last return? Tabitha, let's go to you.
I don't know if they're the most interesting returns, but I did buy a pair of sandals and I was really stoked about them. Unfortunately, the sizing was too small, even though I confirmed the American, the US, even the European sizing. I was like, yep, this should fit no problem. I put them on way too tight, so they're going back, unfortunately. And then I also had picked up a USB hub dock for my laptop because with the latest MacBooks, right, like we have so few ports. So I'd been looking for a solution to add extra ports. And unfortunately, I wasn't a fan of its performance. I was having an issue with one of my monitors when using that dock. So that is also being returned.
Marcus, what's the last thing you returned?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the shoe theme, actually, but for a similar and different reason. So I live in Central Florida. We live by the theme parks. I thought it would be fun to have a pair of those shoes that have the light up sole at the bottom. They flash different colors and stuff, so it'd be fun to walk around at the theme park at night.
Like the ones for small children.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Like the ones for small children, but yeah. I found a site that also makes them for adults or really sure. large children. And for context, I'm 6'2", so it would have to be quite a large child. But I ordered them from a site, and they came, and I ordered a size up just to give myself some space, and they ended up still being too small. And then the quality of them was just so terrible that I put them on to walk around the house, and I had to take them off before I even left the house. They just hurt my feet so badly. I definitely wasn't going to be able to wear them around a theme park all day.
I'm sorry that your light-up shoe gambit didn't work, because that really sounds like it would have been a lot of fun. Now, this is totally unrelated to returns, but I am a big, big fan, as I've gotten older, of making families all the same t-shirt when you go to theme parks.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife is based on what Tabitha's reaction, I think she agrees with my wife, is so opposed to this concept. But I have determined that I want to one day be one of those families that walks around wearing, like, "We made it to Disney World" t-shirts with all of our names on
with
it.
Labels, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. Sure.
Tabitha, you're shaking your head as if this is not the coolest thing you've ever heard of.
I think this is a horrible idea, and I have a lot of sympathy for your wife.
So here's a few stats for you on why people make returns. Here are the top reasons. We'll see how much these match up with ours. Defective or poor quality. Sounds like we hit that. Bought the wrong item. Buyer's remorse. Found it at a better price. It was a gift I didn't like. It was the wrong size. People just committing return fraud. I guess that made the survey. I'm committing return fraud, so that's why I returned. It didn't match the description, or it was delivered late. So,
who admitted to the mail fraud part, the return fraud part? They're like, yeah, that was me. I'll check that box.
People are far too honest. I mean, so right? Like, couldn't you say anything? Just say, like, buyer's remorse. It's way better and not fraudulent. So I don't... But.
And they really trusted that there was no tracking involved with the survey.
Right. However, I think it does sort of serve as a lesson to everybody listening, all retailers, that if people are willing to that openly admit to return fraud, imagine that it is something you may have to deal with your business. All right, next question. Have you ever considered returning something, but then not returned it? And why didn't you return it?
Yeah, definitely. For me, there's a mental dance that I have to do to determine whether it's worth the time and effort to send something back. I have a few questions that I have to ask myself, like, how much was the item in the first place? You know, was that expensive? If it was a relatively inexpensive item, maybe I'll just hang on to it. It's not worth the trouble. Do I need to box it up and ship it back or take it somewhere to be shipped back? Or, you know, do I have to pay a shipping cost to send it back, or is it a free return? And would it just be easier to hang on to this and give it to my kids as a gift or, you know, to a friend, as long as it's not broken, you know, or defective?
Tabitha, have you ever considered returning something and then not returned it?
Oh, absolutely. These glasses that I'm wearing right now, I should really return them because they're way too big. And just the hassle of going through the replacement process, finding a new pair, getting those shipped back out, I decide I'll get a couple little plastic doodads to go on the arms, which I have not installed at all. So they still just fall off all the time. And I guess I'll wait 2 years before I get another pair of glasses. But
those got returned.
Right. No, right. But like you, Marcus, I have that mental sort of like list of considerations I go through. Is it worth the time and effort to return something? How much did it cost? Is it something that I could give to someone else that I know as a gift, or just like, hey, this didn't work for me. Maybe it will work for you, because so often returns can be a hassle from the customer point of view.
Yeah. Well, two comments. First of all, I really like your glasses, and I'm a big fan of like big glasses. I've been trying to get myself a pair of big glasses, but I have this very wide face, so I am unable to find glasses that look big on me no matter what I do. Like, I am jealous that you have found glasses that are too big for you. Second of all, I'm right there with you both on the hassle of making a return. My most recent was I bought this new chair. I had bought my previous chair online didn't like test it anywhere, had never sat in it to see if it felt good. And that one worked great. So I was like, all right, I'm just a guy who fits into chairs. Like I can just order any chair and this will be fine. And so I ordered this chair and it was incredibly uncomfortable. Like I didn't like how the arms moved. I didn't like the back. I didn't like the lean. I didn't like anything about it. And I was going to return it, but the disassembling process to take this chair apart required a number of tools that I just didn't have. And, you know, I asked my friend who owns a contracting company. I was like, hey, do you have these tools? He's like, yeah, I can get those to you. But, you know, then it's like the pandemic and I have to go drive to his house and pick them up. And I wasn't going to do that. It became such a hassle that I'm just keeping the chair. So for the next 3 years, I'm going to be in this chair that I don't really like because I couldn't go through the process of disassembling the chair to send it back.
But so you still use it? Like you don't, it hasn't just found a new home in a corner.
That's correct. I have been sitting in this chair now for 3 months and I maybe one day I will say, you know what, this is just too much. I'm going to buy a new chair. But it felt like such a sunk cost to me that I couldn't do any. And I had already gotten rid of my previous chair that I kind of liked, but was on its last legs. And so now I have this chair. This is just my bad desk chair now.
That's the tricky thing with buying furniture too, right? Especially with the pandemic, it's been really difficult to go anywhere in person and actually sit somewhere. And for a desk chair, this is your daily driver. You're in it for at least 8 hours a day. And it's tough to make that decision when it's online, which is why this is coming at such a great time. We can chat about like the ways that you can improve, you know, making those purchase decisions for your customers.
That is a great point and a fantastic transition. We'll be right back after this with some strategies and ideas to improve your return policy, help curb your number of returns, and make sure that returns don't derail your entire fulfillment process.
You can build a sophisticated e-commerce store faster with GoDaddy Managed Hosting. Sign up now to take advantage of a free domain, daily backups, a built-in SSL certificate, and thousands of dollars of extensions to take your store to the next level. Learn more at GoDaddy.com.
Okay, we are back with some strategies to help with returns at your WooCommerce store. We're going to start with some of the basic strategies and ideas here, and then we'll get into more intermediate and advanced options. So the first thing we want to talk about is just crafting your return policy. People look for return policies when they go to sites. 67% of people say they will check an e-commerce store's return policy before they make a purchase. So I'd like some advice from the panel on how to craft a return policy, what you should make sure to put in there, and your recommendations otherwise for a return policy. Marcus?
I'm definitely in that 67%. That looks really closely to a return policy. Just, you know, anecdotally from me personally, I don't pay a ton of attention to the return window itself, but I do take a peek to see whether or not the return is going to cost or is free. That is important to me. It just makes it feel like the brand is really trying to make sure that what I get, I'm happy with. As far as the policy itself, I think it just depends on the product itself. For return policies, you know, there are always different policies for electronics versus, you know, toys, clothing, that sort of thing. So, and then it also, I think, sort of depends on the pricing of the item as well. Higher priced items versus lower price items.
Yeah, I agree with Marcus there. And I'm also part of that 67%, especially if I'm shopping with the store for the first time. I want to make sure, just want to have that peace of mind and prepare myself in case I do need to return something that they've got it well documented and know what to expect. So looking at the window, the cost of the return, any sort of restocking fee, I think it's really important if you are going to charge that, you should mention any sort of, you know, detail, any additional fees that might be incurred. I did come across this really interesting UPS study that was talking about the top elements of a positive returns experience and what you could include in the policy itself. So like offering free returns, like the free shipping, having like this hassle-free policy, easy to print return labels, timely refunds, having a label in the box. So these were all, respondents had all reacted really positively to these being aspects of a policy. So that's something to consider. But there are tons of online generators. So like if you just type in returns policy into Google, you're going to get a bunch of results with generators that just help you put the text together too. Because you might be concerned about like what sort of wording to use, right? Like you're so busy running your store, you don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time with the copy itself. So you can find these generators and switch out, you know, some of the details with your own that work best for your company so that you don't have to be a complete like wordsmith on getting the policy together.
And Tabitha, based on that study you said, I think that takes us right into the next of the basic strategies we wanted to talk about, which is to make sure you don't neglect the importance of returns to your store. There can be a temptation to deprioritize returns. After all, I mean, they're quite literally the antithesis of making money. They are the opposite. They are taking products back in. But a good, smooth return process can pay off long term. 92% of people in one study said they will buy from a store again if the return process is easy. So like Tabitha said from that study, making sure that the returns process goes smoothly. And later on, as we get into strategies, we'll talk about whether you should be offering free shipping and things like, and how generous you should get with your policy. But in general, when you have a return, make sure you prioritize it and you make sure that that return process goes smoothly. The customer stays informed. And I think that you can engender quite a bit of goodwill that way.
Yeah, I love a hassle-free policy. So that's primarily why, you know, I'm returning two items now, and I will continue shopping like with this merchant because they've made it so easy. I could just print up the shipping label. It's free returns. That the window is pretty decent. I had like 30 days to decide. So any way that you can make it a really positive experience means that the customer's more likely to return and place another order or get a replacement too, which is really great if you can offer that as part of the process. And I was thinking about it. I have a sister-in-law who she will order like multiple sizes of something or in multiple colors with the intention of only keeping one from stores that make it really simple to do the return. But it means that she continues to be a loyal customer with that store because it's a great replacement for that in-store experience. You know, just simply being able to confirm what works best and then doing all of her fashion shopping pretty much online.
And Marcus, what do you think about keeping the return process easy?
I think I mentioned earlier, you know, the mental dance that I do to decide whether or not something is worth the effort of sending it back. And, you know, if I end up keeping an item because I don't think it was worth the effort to send it back, I kind of count that as a learning moment for myself. And I probably won't purchase from that store again next time just because I know the hassle it was going to be to try and get that shipped back. For me, I've ordered a few things from a large online retailer where when I've had to ship some things back, it was as easy as taking the item itself, no box, no anything, to a local store right around the corner. All I have to do is walk it in. They scan the code on my phone. And they handle the rest from there. I don't even have to package it back up or anything. So that's been real easy and real nice.
Yeah, I think it's something that the small and medium-sized e-commerce businesses, it's an area where they have to work hard to compete with the giants that are out there, the ones who can offer such seamless return shipping or even places where you can buy it online, but then return it or exchange it in store if you need to. Obviously, that's going to be a challenge and not something that every small or medium-sized business can accommodate. But as we talk through these strategies, it's something to keep in mind is that you're competing with these giant retailers, unfortunately, whether you like it or not, they have a giant share of the market. And one of the areas where you don't want to lose ground to them is the return. So however you can combat that, I think it's worth trying to figure out means to do so. As we now move into our more intermediate strategies, we're going to talk about some WooCommerce extensions that can really help with your store. The first one that we're going to talk about is one that was truly designed for this process, which is returns and warranty requests. So the returns and warranty requests extension allows you to manage the returns process through one single view. It can help with your time, with your organization, with keeping everything straight.
Yeah, it's a really cool plugin. It was totally built specifically for this podcast. Not really, but like it's like if you walk away, you know, with your list of plugins to install, this should be at the top of the list for sure, because it makes the process so simple. You can set up an automated returns process and warranty, like providing warranty information to your customers by just installing this plugin. They can then initiate the return process from within their account so that they don't need to get in touch with you directly. They don't need to phone or email. They can just log into their customer account. And then basically within two clicks, they've initiated the returns process. And the plugin itself also provides a way to send email notifications both to you as a merchant and to the customer. So everyone's staying informed along the way. You can do like tracking code, provide tracking codes for like a replacement item if you're then shipping a replacement to the customer instead of doing like a complete return for refund. And you can even provide them with a coupon for their next purchase if that's part of your returns process. So it's a really cool plugin and will save you a lot of time.
Yeah, I think like Tabitha said, the organization and communication there is key. And the plugin just makes it super, super easy to do all of that, especially with, you know, this changing of statuses for orders, sending out emails automatically and all of that, keeping your customers in the loop. One of the neat features that I thought too was the ability to add warranty upsells to your products too, to allow customers to choose whether they want to have an extended warranty that, you know, might be an extra few bucks in your pocket or cover some return costs and that sort of thing as well. And offers your customers the ability to just trust the process and know that they're going to be covered if something happens to the product down the road.
It's great. All right, the next extension we're going to talk about is called Print Invoices and Packing Lists. Now, we've come off perhaps a little harsh on customers who do returns in this podcast. It's not necessarily the intention, but many customers are the ones initiating returns. However, studies have found that about 2/3 of returns are actually not because of something that's the shopper's fault, if you will. So these, we're talking about someone getting a damaged product, the wrong item, there was a shipping error, things like that. Broken light-up sneakers. These are all things that were not our faults necessarily when we returned the shoes. Jury's out on whether your sandals, I guess that was also their fault because you said you checked sizes across multiple continents and it still didn't fit correctly. So I think we're all absolved of guilt on these returns of our various footwear. But this extension is just one of the ways you can go to help improve the lines of communication and also to try to improve the picking process and the packing process in order to make sure that you're sending the right things and you're getting them out at the right times to the right people. So Marcus, can you talk a little bit about the Print Invoices and Packing Lists extension?
Yeah, for sure. And just to clear things up, anybody who decides to purchase an adult pair of light-up shoes probably gets what they deserve. So I don't know that I'm gonna point the finger on that one. I think that might be on me. So anyways, with Print Invoices and Packing Lists, I mean, the plugin does exactly what it says. It allows you to have Print Invoices and Packing Lists printed out for your orders. It goes back to that communication, I think. I think when everybody's on the same page about what should be in the box versus what is in the box and whether it's, you know, the correct items, if what you got doesn't match up with what's on your packing list in the box, then, you know, obviously you got the wrong thing. And there are also pick lists in there to help with fulfillment. I think just everybody being on the same page and making sure that it's communicated that you're getting exactly what you ordered and in the, hopefully it's the quality matters and all of that, but this is just more on the communication of making sure that everyone's on the same page about what you're supposed to be getting.
Don't have a lot to add since it's such a straightforward plugin and it with, you know, that one clear advantage. So it's really helping your internal systems, making sure everyone, like you said, Marcus, is on the same page, pun intended. And like considering what you mentioned at the outset, Sam, with returns can eat into 65% of your cost, you want to keep that to a minimum. So if you want to do anything you can to make sure that you're not the one that is causing, you know, that hit to your bottom line. So if you can reduce the human error from creeping in, then this plugin is going to help you do that and avoid those unnecessary returns.
In my brief foray into having an e-commerce store, I always appreciated being able to print out an invoice, a pick list, just to always be able to have those things in front of me as I was doing fulfillment and then putting that invoice or the packing list into the package along with the products. That I always just felt like I wanted to double check, triple check, quadruple check as much as possible that everything was right along the way. And this was just a good way to do it, to have these physical lists printed out. So this is really helpful if you're doing your own film, but it can also be very helpful if you're using third-party logistics as well. All right. We have plenty of other extensions out there in this world that can help with this. And I thought for this one, it could be fun if we all just throw out a different extension that we like that might have a different way of helping to minimize returns.
Yeah, I really like the WooCommerce Product Reviews Pro plugin. Mm-hmm. So it adds an improved interface for reviews, means that your customers can upload their own images. They can even include then, let's say you're a fashion store, they can include like sizing information, fit information, because those are two different things. If I would have looked at the fit of those sandals, perhaps I would have ordered a size larger and been able to keep them. So with a plugin like this, it really helps you as a merchant to provide that extra social proof that is helpful for your customers to decide whether the product is going to fit into their space, it's going to meet their expectations, is it even the right color and natural light? Like, there are so many things that you can't really, you can't really collect all that information easily as a merchant that has a large catalog. So if you can kind of crowdsource it a bit and have your customers helping, it also, it's not only helping keep returns to a minimum, but it can also get those first-time purchasers to click that button for and place their first order with you.
That's a great one. I also find myself really, I really like sites that use the prompting questions in their reviews. I find those are extremely helpful and something that really the more you can do, the better off. Marcus, what about you? Any extension you could recommend that we haven't covered yet to help minimize returns?
Yeah, of course. I really liked Tabitha's social proof with Product Reviews Pro. But for mine, I'm going to go in the other direction for more on the merchant side. And I'm gonna suggest address validation. One of the most important things is to make sure that your packages get to where they're supposed to get to, because otherwise they're coming back to you, and then you have to spend time and money to, you know, figure out what the address really was supposed to be and send it back out. So address validation makes sure at checkout that the address that the customer is putting in is indeed the correct address. And that will reduce undeliverable packages and make sure that you don't get those back and have to deal with those returns that aren't even customer requested, that just come back to you and waste your time and money. So I would say address validation is critical in making sure that your packages get to where they're supposed to go the first time.
That's great. And the full name of that extension, by the way, is postcode/address validation if anyone's looking it up right now. But we'll have that linked in the show notes as well as all the other extensions we've talked about. I'm going to throw mine in. I'm going to recommend the extension WooCommerce 360 degree image. I like that. This is an extension that allows you to take multiple photos of your product to give a 360 degree view of it that someone can use. One of those little things that can help bridge that gap between going to a store and seeing an item versus seeing it online. And the theory is if someone can get a better view of it, perhaps there will be fewer surprises and then fewer returns. All right, let's move on to some advanced techniques that stores can use in order to handle returns. So the first one we're going to talk about here is how to turn returns into a marketing benefit. This is possible. Returns don't have to be entirely downside. In fact, as we talked about earlier, they can lead to and help with customer retention. Now we're going to talk about how you could even turn them into a marketing benefit. So the first thing we're going to talk about is why you should offer a generous returns policy. 80% of returns happen within the first 14 days. What that tells us is, since most people will be returning a product that quickly, it might not hurt to go with a longer window, which you can then promote as a benefit. Any thoughts on the length of a product return window, Tabitha, and how you can use that as part of your marketing and where and how you should promote that?
Well, when I was thinking about, when I think about like a long return window, the company that comes to mind is Zappos. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they've, well, I'm sure you are familiar with them. They're huge. But they have a core value that's like delivering wow through customer service or customer experience, I think. So like they've been really focused on the whole customer experience throughout the order fulfillment process. And they have a 365 day window. So you can return shoes, or perhaps they've expanded beyond shoes now, but like you can return any item within that year, basically, and pretty much hassle-free. Like they need to be unworn. And it's not like they are really getting that many returns. Likely after that 3-month period, they're not getting many, but they can use that as a major like marketing tactic to pull people in so that they have that peace of mind, and they've performed like this sort of goodwill message towards their customers to be like, hey, we're totally here for you through that period. What's really interesting when I was looking at their policy, I found out that for a while, like this is no longer available, but for a while, if you ordered on in a leap year, so on February 29th, You had 4 years. They had that in their shipping policy that for anyone ordering on the 29th, that this policy is now good for until the next leap year. So a whole 4 years, but it's no longer in the policy. So I don't know when they removed it, but it lives on in like some Reddit feeds that I looked at.
Wait, Marcus, you have any thoughts on offering a generous return policy and the benefits of doing so?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I totally agree for myself personally that if I bought something and it comes to me, I probably will know within that first 2 weeks, within those 14 days, whether or not I intend to send something back or not. So whether the window is, you know, 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years, you know, the likelihood of me shipping it back is going to probably be the same. And then you can use that additional window just to sort of kind of build trust and let customers know that you're there to make sure that they're happy with whatever they purchased, even if they need to return it, you know, a month or two from now.
And beyond that, there's also a theory that a longer return policy can actually reduce the number of returns you get. There's something called the endowment effect, which basically is the longer someone has a product in their hands, the more attached they feel to it. And there are a number of other reasons why a longer return policy can reduce returns as well. There's less urgency to make the return if you know you have 2 months, or if you bought it on a leap day, 4 years to return the product. So you feel a little less urgency to get it right out the door. And then eventually you kind of get used to having it in your life. And also, the longer you have it, it can feel like a real sunk cost. Like, you've spent that money, you have it. Do you really want to return it? Over time, you're like, you know, the benefit of not having to go through the process of returning, whether that mean, you know, driving it to the store, whatever it may be, it outweighs the benefit of returning it and you keep it. So any thoughts, Marcus, on the longer return policy and its potential to even reduce returns?
Yeah, I definitely feel that. I think even case in point with Tabitha's glasses, I mean, she's wearing them. At this point, she's had them long enough that she bought doodads to make them fit better rather than to return them. And I get that too. When I buy something, the longer I have it, the more I feel like it's my item, and that maybe even counts as a used item. Now I've used it, even if I haven't used it at all. I've had it for a month and a half. That counts as a used item. I can't even send it back now. So, you know, I just get used to having it and find a way to make that work.
I like that we've all agreed that the technical term for what Tabitha ordered are doodads, because that is just the name of what she ordered for her glasses. Tabitha, what are your thoughts on the longer return policy and trying to use that as even though it may sound counterintuitive, almost as a way to minimize returns?
Yeah, well, I think I really liked how you phrased it with bridging the gap between like the in-store experience and the online experience. And this is that method. Like, you know, when you go into a brick and mortar store, merchants want you to pick things up, because it is, then we feel like we can imagine having this item, owning it ourselves. You have this familiarity and this sense of ownership over it. And we can't really do that online unless we get that item to them. So by getting it in their hands, they're more likely to stick with it and even overlook or like some of the downsides, like my glasses. They may fall off my face.
Or my chair.
Fairly often. Yeah. And I'm always adjusting them. But this is just going to be my life for two years until I get another pair. I'm not going through the hassle. I could technically still return them, and I don't want to deal with it.
Right. All right. Another advanced technique we want to talk about here is offering free shipping on exchanges, but paid shipping on refunds. So I found this in a blog post from actually an old friend of ours who we've all worked with. His name is Alex McEachern. I will link to his blog post here. But I thought this was an interesting theory on ways that you can use the shipping in returns as a technique both to reduce the number of returns and also for future customer retention. Because free shipping on exchanges and returns, this is a big deal. Customers do have essentially an expectation that they're going to be able to exchange their products for free. And when that free shipping comes in, that's a huge cost. That goes into that enormous amount of cost that goes into processing returns for an e-commerce store. So the strategy here is you approach exchanges, that is quite a tongue twister, you approach exchanges and refunds differently, because exchanges are building a customer relationship. So you want to encourage them. That's someone who still wants your products, whereas a refund may signal the end of a customer relationship. That's why he would recommend on exchanges, you offer free shipping, People want that on their returns. People are very serious about how important free shipping is to them on returns. But if someone wants a refund, you charge paid shipping because now you're just trying to discourage it because that would be the end of the customer relationship. So what do you think about that strategy? He says that they've seen examples of brands reducing their refund rate by 25% using that strategy. Tabitha, what do you think of that? Does that work for you, or is that overthinking this entire process?
Yeah, like I still think that the whole return strategy or the process is still part of developing that customer relationship. I think if you've made it a really positive experience, then that customer is more likely to return to you. And they don't necessarily need to get a replacement item or to find an exchange. Like, I shop with so many places that I just happen to have to return an item to. I can't think of anyone where I've returned an item and I've decided that, no, I'm never shopping with them again. Like, I'm not holding that against them whatsoever, because it can come down to human error. It was maybe an error on my part with what I had selected. So I think that this is really a gateway into developing and nurturing that relationship with this new customer to make sure that they do come back to you. And I don't think I can see how it can help reduce or minimize like the internal costs by setting up this hybrid returns process. So it can be a win-win then for both the merchant and the customer, in the sense that you're at least able to offer a free exchange. So there is free shipping offered there for a return, but then it's the customer that is having to carry the cost for an outright return. I'm not a fan of it personally. I'd be more prone to go with a different merchant if I saw, you know, a similar item for sale by them and they have like a free returns policy. I would shop with them.
Interesting. And Marcus, what do you think? Do you like it, or is it a turnoff to you as well?
Yeah, I actually hadn't seen that until just before we sat down to record this. I think it's an interesting strategy that logically makes sense, but is I think kind of a merchant focused strategy instead of a customer focused strategy. I mean, I think the bonus here is that you still have the option for a full refund, even if it does mean that you have to pay the shipping to get your product back. So you're still being left an out. You're not tied in there, but I think putting the burden on the customer there is, you know, like Tabitha said, I don't know. I think it's a little off-putting. I think it's a good strategy for the merchant side, but I don't think that it fosters the right relationship with the customer necessarily, especially when, like Tabitha mentioned too, especially when it's not the customer's fault in all situations, and to put that on them to have to pay the shipping to get your refund back, even in the cases where it wasn't a mistake that they made, it would definitely deter me from necessarily buying with that merchant as well.
Yeah, I would agree. It's definitely it's probably something that we would not say unilaterally would work for all businesses. You may find that it does make sense for, you know, one of the businesses you own or that you're doing for one of your clients, but it may not work everywhere. I think this is a case-by-case thing, maybe something you test out, or maybe something you say does or just doesn't feel right for you. But it's an interesting strategy at the very least, as we're looking for theories on how to reduce returns or keep the cost down. It's one option. We thought we'd put it out there because it is an interesting technique and sort of an advanced merchant technique.
And I think that was a really cool little point that you made there, Sam. Like, it's worth A-B testing. We talk about A-B testing in a lot of different areas of a business. And, you know, my main focus in my day-to-day work is really on marketing. So I look at A/B testing emails a lot, but you can do that with your shipping and return policy. You can look at like what works in certain, you know, for certain situations to see how your customers respond. And yeah. So why not test it out within your market?
Give it a go. And if your orders don't decrease and your returns do, then you're on the right track.
Right.
Yeah. It's a good call. Test and experiment. You never know what will work and what won't, but if it's something that appeals to you, definitely go for it. And all right, we'll be right back after this with our question and answer segment.
Get your clients online faster and for less money with managed hosting plans from GoDaddy. Visit GoDaddy.com to learn more.
We are back to do some question and answer. Our first question today: will using too many hooks slow down my WooCommerce store? Marcus, you want to take that? Tabitha, you want to take that?
Yeah, I'll take that one. But it's going to be the answer that nobody wants, which is yes and no. to just step back a moment, hooks are just, you know, a code a code version, a code way to make some changes to your site, right? So it kind of depends on what changes that you're trying to make. You can use hooks in your store to, you know, change what a block of text says, which has almost, you know, no side effects on performance. That's totally fine. You can do that as many times as you want, but you can also use hooks to do things like calculate discounts across all your products in the shop. And then if you have to pull, you know, a value for that discount from your database as well, that's going to cause a whole lot of calculations to be going on in the background when your page is trying to load. And that definitely can cause some slowdowns on your site and some performance issues, which, you know, has a whole host of ramifications when your site is slow. You know, there are conversion issues, there are Google search ranking issues and all of that. So again, it depends. It depends on what you're trying to accomplish with those hooks, but it may or may not, depending on how much you're trying to do.
Tabitha, anything to add there?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, nice. I would say we see a lot of questions with people asking, will this slow down my site? How do I speed up my site? This is really common. And I think one of the things we often tell people is just get rid of things you're not using, whether it's an extension or any number of hooks. You might as well not have something there if you're not using it, because you never know like what formula of things is going to add up and cause even microseconds of delay, which can sometimes make a big difference.
Yeah, definitely add what you need to, but no more than you have to.
Right. That's a very good succinct way of summing up my 1 minute of rambling. So thank you, Marcus, for putting it into four words. Our next question today. I'm planning to hire an agency to start handling my marketing. What should I look for in an agency to help me choose which one to go with?
Well, I think there are a bunch of questions that you could ask yourself first before choosing agency. Like, what stage are you in? Are you a startup? Are you more established? Where are you at within your marketing development process? Are you focused on acquiring customers, optimizing your system's performance? What's your focus? Do you want to focus on your brand development, your product or customer development? So you can take all of these sort of questions and to figure out then what sort of agency you want to look for. If you are really just starting out, you might just need a marketing coach that helps like startups or businesses that don't have many resources to kind of just be coached along. You could then look at like a consulting company if you're more in the strategic planning phase, or look for a dedicated service firm that provides like various promotional activities depending on what your focus is. So you want to identify what your needs are and the jobs to be done that you want to hire someone for, and then look at the marketing agencies that fall within.
Marcus, do you have any thoughts on what to look for in an agency?
Yeah, everything that Tabitha said makes total sense. Having worked in a marketing agency for a number of years, I think one of the most often overlooked things is just a culture fit. Just like you're hiring an employee, you'd want to make sure that that the culture fits between your company and the marketing agency. These are people that you're going to have to work with very frequently, be on phone calls with and face-to-face and all of that. And making sure that you get along seems like a little thing, but it's a big deal. And making sure that there's a culture fit between the two companies, I think, is really important.
No, that's some great advice. And well, that does it for our episode on returns. I would like to thank Tabitha and Marcus. Great job today. Really insightful and helpful stuff. If you would like to submit questions for future question and answer sections, or you'd like to find out about all of the extensions we've talked about today, you can check out the show notes for this episode. Also, many of the extensions we've discussed today are actually available for free as part of GoDaddy's managed WordPress e-commerce hosting package. You can get nearly $6,000 worth of free premium extensions with this package, along with a number of other things, and the price is extraordinarily reasonable. It's less than $20 a month. So if you're interested in new hosting for yourself or your clients, please do check that out. Now, Tabitha, Marcus, any final words to say to all the people out there listening in podcast land? Yes, Tabitha, this is a new feature I introduced the last time, and I caught you both totally flat-footed on this one.
What's the question?
All right, and we'll leave it with that. Thanks, everyone, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon.